Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. All witnesses before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Judge Bartley, and I'm joined today by Judge Falvey and Judge Lauer. And we're here today for the matter of Stanley L. Davis versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 205411. Counsel for the parties, please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Yes, Your Honor. Kenny Dohakis for appellant, Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Dohakis.
My name is Alexander Yu, and this is Drew Silo, representing the Secretary in this case.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Yu and Mr. Silo. As you know, you'll each have 30 minutes to present argument, and Mr. Dohakis, I understand you want to reserve 7 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, great. We will make that happen. And Mr. Dohakis, you may go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Mr. Davis would first like to thank this Court for the opportunity to present his appeal. This case presents the Court with at least three issues of first impression, all of which will determine what evidence was properly before the Board when it adjudicated Mr. Davis's appeal. First, Mr. Davis asked this Court to interpret Section 7105 in conjunction with 7113 to determine what date Congress meant to start the clock for submitting additional evidence to the Board within an AMA Board appeal. Congress, for the first time, introduced a term, receipt of the NOD, notice of disagreement, as the term, and as the term receipt is different than filing, Congress must have intended for these two words to have different meanings. Second, Mr. Davis asked this Court to consider two aspects of constructive possession. The first is whether certain evidence that corroborates or supports his assertion that his attorney did not receive notice of a rating decision is relevant to his appeal and should reasonably be expected to be part of the record. The second is whether evidence submitted within 60 days of a statement of the case, but before opting into the AMA, is treated as if it were submitted with the claim on appeal. This requires the Court to determine the applicability of Section 3.156B in this very unique context. So I want to start first with determining when the Board receives a notice of disagreement. To answer this question, we must look primarily to the plain language of two statutes, 7105A and 7113C. 7105A states that appellate review shall be initiated by the filing of a notice of disagreement in the form prescribed by the Secretary, while 7113C states that the record before the Board is limited to what evidence the AOJ considered in the decision on review and any evidence that's submitted with the NOD or within 90 days following receipt of the notice of disagreement. So here we see two terms that have clearly different meanings. As noted in our briefing, Black's Law defines file in two ways, either to deliver or to commence a lawsuit. And we think that it's more properly read to be consistent with delivering as opposed to initiating, since 7105 already states that an appellate review will be initiated. And so we think it's more proper to be read as delivering. This is further evidenced by Congress defining the term filing as delivering or mailing an appeal to this court in 7266B. Separately, Blacks defines receipt as the act of receiving something, especially with taking physical possession. And this is the same definition that we see in Webster's.
So, well, Mr. Dohakis, I admit to being a little confused by your argument. I guess from a more layperson's perspective, doesn't the difference between those terms, isn't it accounted for by what perspective you're talking about. Like here we're talking about the veteran files and VA, or the board, receives. So can't that account for the use of two different terms? They are speaking from the different, they're attuned to the different perspectives that are relevant to these rules.
It can be, Your Honor, but I think when we look at the regulations that the Secretary made with regard to how the notice of disagreement is filed, we can see that it's quite a bit different, because the Secretary demands that the notice of disagreement must be submitted to the board or filed with the board, not with the VA, as in all as in most other filings, but specifically to the board. And in his regulation, he actually limits it to a single method of mailing it to a PO box. And so by looking at particularly at 7266C, we see that Congress specifically meant that filing and receipt are two different terms. And in that statute, they equate filing and receipt as the same thing when mailed and postmarked. So an appeal that is received by this court is also the date of delivery or the date of the postmark if it is mailed. So when Congress wanted receipt and filing to mean the same thing, like they did in 7266, they said so, which they did not in 7105 and 7113. And so we must assume that the Congress did this on purpose.
Mr. Dehakis, assuming that they are two terms with two different meanings, didn't the board find that it was received, that NOD was received by the board on August 14th? And how is that clearly erroneous, that finding of fact?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. The board's determination that it was received by the board is not supported by the record. All that we know from the record is that the board sent a letter in September notifying Mr. Davis that it had received his appeal. It doesn't say when, and it doesn't say it doesn't say where. The other piece of evidence is the notice of disagreement itself, which has a header on it, which shows that it was received by the Evidence Intake Center in August. So when you look at the process, we faxed it to the board at their fax number, and as far as we understand, that all the faxes are rerouted to the Evidence Intake Center, and everything shows up there. So the board doesn't physically get anything until it goes through the Evidence Intake Center, who then finds the veteran, puts it in that person's VVMS file, and then alerts the board to...
Is that rerouting done by some automated process or by actually taking the fax off of the fax machine and scanning it and sending it to someone or delivering it to the intake center? Or
as far as we understand, Your Honor, and of course this is not in the record, but from communications through the VA when the Evidence Intake Center was first stood up, I do believe that there is some written record of this that the VA possesses, because I've seen it. All faxes, electronic faxes, are rerouted to the Evidence Intake Center. In fact, if you mail a document to the board's PO box, it never comes to Washington, D.C. It is instead rerouted to one of the Evidence Intake Centers. And then there are contractors who scan the documents, find the proper file to put it in, upload it into VBMS, and then alert whichever office within the VA is responsible for that document.
Thank you.
And when you use the term reroute, so do you know where the fax machine, not the one that Mr. Davis used or that you used, but the one on the VA side, where that, before it's rerouted, use of that term means that it was actually routed to one place and then rerouted to the EIC, right. So do you know what that initial place is?
I think, Your Honor, I misspoke. It's not rerouted. It's just it never goes to the board. So if I were to send something, say, as a fax, instead of going to the board and then to the EIC, it actually goes directly
to the EIC. It's routed to the EIC.
Yes, Your Honor, so it's routed. And we understand from from some documentation, as I said, that we've seen, that the post office knows to send mail addressed to any office within the VA, particularly the board, directly to the evidence intake center. So the board never receives anything until, presumably, it's in BVMS and an employee at the board then dockets the appeal and notifies the claimant.
And so you're explaining to me what you think happened with our Fithian case law with the advent of the AMA and rules that specified to the board. I mean, I think the old rules specified to the board, too, the legacy-type rules, had that language, and we've always said, well, VA is a single entity, and, you know, service on one part of VA is service on the other, so to speak.
Yes, Your Honor. I think a couple things with Fithian. Number one is the language of the statutes did not contain any indication that anything was premised on the receipt of a notice of disagreement or any kind of appeal. All of the statutes pre-AMA talked about filing. With the AMA, we have 7113, which, again, for the very first time, creates this concept of receipt by the board. And as I mentioned, 7262 had already acknowledged a difference between receiving or delivering. They don't use the term receipt specifically, but as we explained, receipt means, under the plain terms, that it would have been taken possession of by whoever is receiving it. So 7262, before the AMA, recognized that there was a difference between the court or the board taking possession of or receiving an appeal and the filing of that appeal. And Congress said that so long as you file it on time, then the court will have received it in a timely way and they can hear your appeal. So when 7113 was promulgated, they premised the introduction of evidence on when the board receives the appeal. And it seems like it's a little nitpicky, but I will say through experience, although the board has gotten much better at it, at this time it was not uncommon for weeks or sometimes months to pass before the board would acknowledge the notice of disagreement. And in fact, it would take weeks or even months before it even showed up in VBMS. And in my experience, we would see that it was missing. It passed the deadline, and then so we would start filing letters and saying, hey, we sent this. Here's another copy. And then, lo and behold, there would be two copies of it in the file. But it was not uncommon, and even today it still takes several days, although, again, as I said, it's gotten much, much better. The other issue, the other practical effect of this is not only does 7113 premise the ability to file evidence within the 90 days of the board's receipt, but the claimant is also allowed to change his docket, his or her docket, and request where they were in a direct review lane, let's say, and they wanted to switch over to the evidence lane. The regulation says that they get 90 days from when the board notifies them that they had received their change of docketing lane notice. So essentially the new notice of disagreement. So okay. To
get back to Fithian, your view is now, are you 100% certain that under the old legacy system, the statute did not, I mean, I think statutes in general mentioned receipt by the board at some points, and we kind of overrode that with Fithian with taking a broader view of what was meant. It was meant to be received by VA. Are you saying that you think that case law doesn't apply anymore with the passage of the AMA because statutes are more specific? So it's two questions. One, you're certain that the old statutes did not specify receipt by the board or something like that, mentioning the board and just mentioned VA?
Yes, and, sure. I'm certain of that.
Okay. And so you're advocating that all of that case law has fallen by the wayside with or just as to this specific filing of a 10-182
Well, and Your Honor, the thing to keep in mind is that what we're talking about is the receipt of the notice of disagreement. One can still file a notice of disagreement by placing it in the mail, by faxing it, by electronically uploading it, hand-delivering it. All of these things, receipt and, filing is the, just has to be completed before the deadline. So by parsing what the difference between receipt and filing, we're not necessarily going to exclude anybody from filing a timely appeal or really any other filing that's on a deadline, because the filing under 7105 is still has the mailbox rule incorporated, where the postmark counts as the date of filing so long as it's properly addressed, et cetera. So the filing and the initiation of the appeal is untouched by whether the board received the notice of disagreement or not. And the other thing to keep in mind is under the legacy system, the notice of disagreement and even the Form 9 was filed at the agency. The agency prepared the case and then transferred, certified it to the board, and then the board received the records from the agency itself. So,
But 7113 doesn't say receipt by the board. It's vaguer than that. It just says received.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right?
It does. And I would submit that had the secretary not created their regulations to be specific that the notice of disagreement must be filed with the board, then we wouldn't be here talking about this. But because the secretary specified that we have to file the notice of disagreement with the board, the receipt of the notice of disagreement cannot occur until the board receives it. And the because of their specificity within their own regulations, which the Congress gave them, you know, great latitude to create whatever regulations they wanted as far as the form or place of filing, and the regulation is titled Place of Filing, and it says it will be submitted to the board. And so until the board, we have to take them at their word that if they want it sent to the board, then we have to wait until the board gets it before it's received. And again, the practical implications are not only with evidence, because again, when you wait weeks or months and the veteran, particularly one who's not represented, but even ones that are, can get very confused, as we did, on when the board received the notice of disagreement and when we're allowed to file evidence with his notice of disagreement. And the record in here shows that we got the letter in September. We wrote the VA soon after and said, hey, thank you for your letter. We understand you received it on this date, and we will submit evidence within 90 days. The board had an opportunity at that point to tell us, oh, no, you're wrong. You actually don't, you know, we didn't get it on this date. Or this is not when we received it. This is just a letter letting you know that but they didn't do that. And so when Mr. Davis filed his evidence, he should be allowed to rely on the board's communications and on the secretary's regulations that say the notice of disagreement must be received by the board before the time to start the submitting evidence should begin.
Mr. Dohakis?
Yes, Your Honor.
When Mr. Davis and you were also CC'd on the VA letter from June of 2019, which gave the opportunity, of course, to opt into the AMA, and it also included as an enclosure the VA Form 20-0998. And in that form, it gave on page 2 of the form, appeal to the board and provided both the address and the fax number, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and what were your thoughts when you faxed the actual form, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what was your understanding about where that was actually going? Where did you think, when it was listed under Board of Veterans Appeals with a PO box and a fax number, where did you think the fax was actually going?
At that time, Your Honor, I knew, based on prior experience, that it would get routed to the EIC and then put into VBMS. I would say that based on only on that communication, that a claimant, particularly one not represented, would expect that it would go to the board. But as the record very clearly shows, it was not received by the board. It was received by the Evidence Intake Center. And so when we look at what's actually the evidence in the record, that does not support the board's finding that the board received the appeal in August. Rather, we know that it was put in VBMS, and nobody at the board is aware that this NOD existed until it was in VBMS. Even though the evidence...
That's certainly your position. We're going to hear from Mr. Yu.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you stop at looking at the confirmation across the top of the document with the Claims Intake Center, but, of course, it continues on to talk about the BVA facts, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you have both the VA form that tells you you have the opportunity to either mail it to the P.O. box or to fax it to the number, but both of them indicate that it goes to the board, correct?
Both, Your Honor, I read those as saying that both of those methods are a way to get the notice of disagreement to the board. I would not read those to say that the board is going to be in receipt directly of those communications, whether it's by fax or by mail.
Okay, but you also understood at the time that you were required to file it with the board.
Yes, Your Honor.
Correct? By statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so I'm having trouble. So your argument is, hey, went to the Evidence Intake Center, but you knew that you were required to file it with the board, and so how do you reconcile your argument with the requirement per statute to file it with the board?
2 points on that, Your Honor. Number one, I would argue, that this regulation is invalid, is contrary to their practice and probably their statute. It's an impossibility today to file something, to get something to the board. As I said, all mail doesn't go to the board. It goes to the Evidence Intake Center. The post office automatically diverts it there. Any faxes, any electronic communications go directly to the Evidence Intake Center. If one were to electronically file an appeal, I don't know if the e-benefits, which the veterans have or claimants have the capability to electronically file appeals, but all of those communications go directly to VBMS, and anything that we now have the ability to electronically file documents, if I were to electronically file an appeal, a notice of disagreement, the secretary accepts it. They're not enforcing this requirement to mail anything to their PO box because the PO box will never receive it. And so my understanding in June of 2019 was that if I fax it, then the board will accept it as filed correctly, even though the method of getting it there in the regulation was by mail to the PO box.
So your argument is that there was clear error by the board's determination that the board received on August 14th the NOD?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's inappropriate or unlawful or invalid about the board acting through an agent, a centralized intake center to receive evidence, to say the things we're supposed to receive come to you? Even no rerouting, no routing, no nothing, just this is where we will receive the evidence. And then that August 14th, that's the day you sent it. It's the day you or your staff checked the fax machine to make sure, okay, receipt acknowledged, and we're good. We met our requirement to file by a certain date. We've done it, and what VA has now done on their end is receive it.
Your Honor, I don't see anything unlawful or wrong with
it. Wouldn't that be consistent with Fithian then?
It would, again, Your Honor, with respect to the filing. So long as the filing is done in a timely way and done properly in a way that the VA is going to accept. And they've indicated they will accept a fax, even though the regulation says you can only mail it to this PO box. And so we got to remember that the filing is different than the receipt.
Sure, but they can be virtually instantaneous nowadays.
Yes, Your Honor, they can, but in this case they were not.
The board said that they, in essence, were.
Yes, Your Honor, and as we argued, that is clearly wrong. The board never got it, and nobody at the board was or could have been made aware of the existence of the notice of disagreement until it was put in BBMS, and somebody outside of the board alerted them that it was there.
So if I can jump in, your argument is that by putting it, you gave us the definition earlier of receipt, which involved physical custody. And so how would your argument that, hey, it wasn't received by the board until it was uploaded into BBMS, how would that further physical receipt? What about that? What about uploading into a database would involve physical receipt beyond the agency already receiving, arguably, the document?
Yes, Your Honor. If I said physically receive, I misspoke. I meant what I mean by that is to take possession of. And I think that the board can take possession of something that's electronically uploaded once it's put in the database in BBMS, because the board doesn't have access to the notice of disagreement until it's put in BBMS. The only people that have access to it are the people at the Evidence Intake Center, who are contractors, who are not employees. I don't want to get into agency law, but they're not employees of the board for sure, even though they may be employed or paid for by the secretary.
Well, Mr. Hawkins, I think, according to my notes, you used the term physical possession, so I correct myself there. But how is the receipt of a fax transmission any different than the uploading of that document into VBMS? How would you distinguish the two?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, distinguish between receiving a fax and uploading it into VBMS? Is
correct.
That so? Again, I think, Your Honor, that had the fax gone to the board's fax, like it used to, even maybe a year or two before this happened, then it would have been received when the fax transmission was successful. But that's not what happened here. And we know that because the evidence in the record says that the Evidence Intake Center received it first. And it took them over a month or nearly a month to put it into BBMS and for the board to actually get it and respond to it and act on it. And that is really the important part of all of this, because until the board is made aware of it and informs the veteran or the claimant that they have the appeal that has been docketed and that their time to submit evidence has started, the claimant is unaware that anything's happening. And so receiving can happen instantaneously when it goes directly to that office. But again, because the Evidence Intake Center is not the board, the agency, the ROs are not the board, we think that the statutes and regulations should be read to find a difference. And I have gone over my time, Your Honor, so I will.
Well,
there are no other questions.
Yeah, Mr. DeHakis, so let's just move on to your argument about the notification letter. So are you arguing that he detrimentally relied on this, what you consider to be this misleading letter from the board, or are you making some kind of due process argument? Are you mixing them?
I think it's a fair process, Your Honor, but it's also we clearly detrimentally relied on it. We sent a letter that said, hey, we got this in September, and we will submit it within 90 days, and we put the date December, and we submitted it within those 90 days. And there should be certainly there's a detrimental reliance issue here. Potentially there's an equitable tolling argument. We didn't make that in this case. For the purposes of this appeal, we would like this court to address the issue of when does the board receive or does a statute require the board to receive it and when did that happen, and then separately the constructive possession. But from a fair process standpoint, that would certainly exist as well because the board didn't tell them when they got it until they found his evidence was untimely. And at no time did they ever say anything about the timing or the fact that Mr. Davis read the board to have received it in September as opposed to August.
Okay, and can you clarify, assuming that we don't We've kind of danced around the constructive possession argument, but assuming we decide that the evidence doesn't come in, your constructive possession argument isn't working, and your reliance arguments aren't working either, or fair process arguments. You're still asserting error in the board's finding that the initial NOD was late? And what are your arguments, briefly, about that?
Your Honor, we did not challenge the board's determination that the initial notice of disagreement was late in this appeal. We have the option to file a supplemental claim with that, and so and that's why we're really asking the court to address these important issues, because we want to know what record the board had before it so that we can know what additional evidence should be given to the RO to assert as relevant evidence to assert that his initial in notice of disagreement on the 2016 rating decision was timely. And so we presented evidence here that to the board that there was lots of problems with mailing. Everyone knows that they had problems with mailing, but they excluded a lot of evidence that we think bolsters his case. And so we purposely did not challenge the board's determination, except that they did so on an incomplete record, which, as we argued for prejudicial error, deprived him of fair process.
Okay. That's a helpful clarification. Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dahakis. Mr. Yu?
Good afternoon. In this case, the closed record feature of AMA governs appellant's appeal. Under 38 U.S.C. Section 7113C2, the board was only permitted to consider the evidence of record at the time of the issuance of the June 21, 2019 SOC and evidence submitted within 90 days of receipt of the August 14, 2019 VA Form 10182. We ask that the court should hold that the board base its decision on the proper evidentiary record and affirm the board's finding that the December 2008 NOD was not timely filed as to the appeal of the May 2016 rating decision. My presentation will consist of three main points. The first is that the evidence submitted on December 5, 2019 was not received within 90 days of receipt of the August 14, 2019 VA Form 10182, and therefore the board could not consider this evidence under 7113C2. Second, while appellant's appeal was in the legacy system, the 2017 GOA report, the April 30, 2019 letter submitted by appellant's current counsel, and the two affidavits submitted by CCK in the Romero case were not constructively part of the evidentiary record because they could not reasonably be expected to be part of the appellant's claims file. And finally, while appellant's appeal was in the legacy system, the two June 24, 2019 letters submitted by appellant's current counsel on the December 5, 2019 are not part of the evidentiary record, either under the constructive possession doctrine or under 38 CFR section 3.156B. Turning to the first point, the court should find that the evidence submitted on December 5th, 2019 was not received within 90 days of receipt of the August 14, 2019 VA Form 10182, and therefore, under the closed record features of AMA, the board could not consider this evidence. As previously stated, 38 U.S.C. Section 7113C2 prohibits the board from considering any evidence which was not of record at the time of the AOJ decision or received within 90 days of receipt of the VA Form 10182. Here, on August 14, 2019, appellant's current counsel faxed the VA Form 10182 to the BVA fax number. The VA Form 10182 was clearly marked as being received on August 14, 2019, and as Judge Lauer pointed out, it clearly indicates that the source was the BVA fax number. Here, the evidence submitted on December 5th, 2019, was not received within 90 days of August 14, 2019. Therefore, the board could not consider it. Recently, in Aviles-Rivera, the court upheld the closed record features of AMA, calling it an intended feature of AMA when Congress enacted the statutes. The court also recognized that when Congress implemented the closed record features, Congress also added the supplemental claim features and used the lower new and relevant evidence standard for supplemental claims for the purposes of avoiding the hamster wheel of continuous remands, which has plagued the legacy system. In Aviles-Rivera, the court recognized that the proper remedy for a case such as this, where appellant has submitted evidence outside of an evidence submission period, that the proper remedy is to file a supplemental claim and to have the evidence that was submitted on December 5th, 2019 considered in the first instance.
Let's talk about the 90-day letter that Mr. Davis received. So he's arguing that it was unclear. Can you tell me why you don't think it's unclear?
Yes, Your Honor. The letter submitted or issued by the board on September 9, 2019 clearly indicates that the 90-day begins from the date of receipt. It doesn't say the date of the notice letter, and this, of course, is consistent with the statute. We would disagree that there was any detrimental reliance in this case because nothing in that September 9, 2019 letter would have suggested to appellant or opposing counsel that the 90-day evidence submission period began on a different date.
How is someone supposed to know what day VA actually received the form?
Yes, Your Honor. We would point to the prior case law on this issue that in Savitz, the Federal Circuit has previously held that the postmark rule dictates that an NOD is considered both received and filed on the date of the postmark. While in this case there is no traditional mailing postmark, the document is nonetheless noted as being received on August 14, 2019. So we would say here.
How was he to know that?
Well, 2 points, Your Honor. First, we would emphasize that here, when opposing counsel faxed it in, he would know that was the date of sending. And under the postmark rule, that would be considered the date of filing and receipt. And so he should be sophisticated enough to know that that would initiate the 90-day evidence submission period.
And what if someone did the mailing option, which he did not?
Even under the mailing option, the person sending it would know the date of sending. That would, again, initiate under the postmark rule, would mark the date of filing and date of receipt and initiate the 90-day evidence.
Oh, so someone who mails versus faxes gets a different 90-day letter?
No. My understanding, Your Honor, is that there would not be a different letter. Again, the letter doesn't specify the date of receipt. It simply says your 90-day evidence submission period begins from the date the VA Form 10-182 was received.
Yeah, and so my question was, when it's mailed, how do you know what day VA received it? It doesn't say from the postmark date when you put it in the post box or whatever. It says from the date that the board received it.
Yes, Your Honor. We would say that when Congress enacted AMA, they were aware of the postmark rule and the established case law on that issue. And so even though the statute uses the term receipt, nonetheless, the established case law is that the date of the postmark is considered both the date of filing and receipt, and that would initiate the 90-day period.
Right. So VA knows that, but I don't understand how a veteran would know it.
So a veteran would still be based on the date they sent in the VA Form 9 or the VA Form 10-182.
But that's not what it says. It says the date you have 90 days. What if you're trying to get evidence together or whatever it may be, a doctor's opinion. If you don't know what end date you're dealing with, then how do you navigate this evidence submission lane?
Your Honor, we would point to my responses previously, but we would emphasize that even if the veteran were to miss that evidence submission period, that AMA already has ready-made remedies for such a situation as recognized by the court in Aviles-Rivera, and they could simply file a supplemental claim to have that evidence considered in the first instance. So that would eliminate any potential detriment to the veteran if they do not submit evidence within that 90-day evidence submission period.
So any failure that the board has here of notifying the veteran of when the 90-day period is going to end, there's no such thing. I mean, they can just start a supplemental claim then. That's what you're saying.
First, I would emphasize that there is no requirement that the notification letter issued by the board here is not what under the statute would initiate the 90-day evidence submission period. But even if there were, even if a veteran were not to understand clearly, there is a remedy already available under AMA that would resolve any potential detriment to the veteran by filing a supplemental claim.
And I'm just curious, the 90-day letters that used to be sent out under Legacy?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you familiar with those?
Yes, I am.
Weren't they more wasn't the veteran able to use the date of the letter, or wasn't it more specific than this?
No, Your Honor. If I recall, the old Legacy 90-day letters actually emphasized, as per the regulation at the time, that the veteran had 90 days or until the date of the decision was issued. I do not recall the specifics sufficient enough to answer, I believe, your specific question. But my recollection from that is that even the 90-day letters issued previously under the Legacy system, but we would emphasize here that the statute states that the particular language used in the statute here is the receipt of the NOD, whereas the regulation at that time, I believe, chose a different benchmark, whereas here it is very specific that receipt of the NOD, and under the Federal Circuit's previous holdings, the postmark dictates the date of both filing and receipt of the NOD.
Uh-huh. And so here it took almost a month from the date of the fax to the date of the 90-day letter. Is that correct?
It was approximately that.
3 weeks or something like that, yeah. So what's happened? It seemed like an awfully long stretch of time to me to get something which, you know, now that we're dealing with electronics, is like, what's happening during that period, do you know?
My best understanding is that due to the volume of mail, and this both being electronic and physical mail being received and processed through VA, that it does result in a delay between when a document is received and when a document gets uploaded into VBMS. But we would also note that in such a situation, that appellant's interpretation of using this later date as the date of receipt could actually result in a detriment to veterans, since if a veteran were to, for example, file their VA Form 10-182, as they did here on August 14, 2019, let's say, for example, 5 days later he submits some evidence, and this evidence actually gets uploaded into VBMS before the VA Form 10-182 gets uploaded here on September 9, 2019, under the strict reading of the statute, 7113C2, the board could not consider this evidence because it would not have been submitted at the time of the issuance of the AOJ decision or within 90 days of the date of receipt of the NOD, which...
Isn't that situation what we're dealing with in our Cook case, a whole separate case now that's before the court?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Something very similar. But, again, we would emphasize that that the well-settled law here has already established what is to be considered the date of filing and receipt of the NOD. And when Congress enacted the AMA, Congress was well aware of this case law and did not change it when enacting the statute, even though it uses the word receipt of the NOD in 7113C2.
Uh-huh. And so I believe in the record I saw that the appellant filed a letter after receiving the 90-day letter and listed a date on there that it was basically like, I believe I have this long period of time to submit evidence. Now, why didn't the board respond to that, saying like, no, that's 3 weeks after your due date?
I'm unsure why the board didn't respond, but we would emphasize here that the statutory language is very clear. It indicates the date of receipt of the NOD and not the date of notification of receipt of the NOD. We would also emphasize here that appellant was represented by counsel who had access to VBMS since 2016 and could have reviewed the VBMS to determine the exact date of receipt as marked on the VA Form 10-182. But also, because appellant here was represented by counsel, we should assume that the counsel should be aware of the existing case law that the postmark rule would dictate the date of both filing and receipt, and based on the clear language of the statute, which is receipt of the NOD versus receipt by the board, or some variation of that. If there are no other questions on this first point, I will move to my second.
I have one other question, Mr. Hugh, and that is under the applicable reg, which is section 20.203A, that only talks about for MA, Appeals Modernization Act, NODs, the ability to file via mail. Where does the authority to file via fax come from?
My understanding is that there is no specific regulation regarding that, but we agree with opposing counsel on this point that VA did accept the fax here and that under the current interpretations, barring appellant's attempt to reinterpret the date of receipt, that VA considers it to be timely filed. If there are no other points, then before moving to my second argument, I would like to emphasize at this point that appellant is the one who has opted into AMA and chosen to be governed by the closed record features. And it is only because the evidence submitted by opposing counsel on December 5th, 2019 was not submitted within an evidence submission period is appellant now making arguments under the constructive possession doctrine and 3.156B in an attempt to get the same evidence considered part of the evidentiary record. However, under AMA, there is already a ready-made remedy. And as the court recognized in Aviles-Rivera, if a claimant has evidence which has not been considered, which has not been submitted during an evidence submission period, the proper remedy chosen by Congress in enacting AMA is to file a supplemental claim. So here, the court need not address the issues of constructive possession or 3.156B because there is already a ready-made remedy under AMA, and we ask that the court should hold that the proper remedy in this case is for appellant to file that supplemental claim to have the evidence submitted on December 5th, 2019, considered in the first instance. We would emphasize that this remedy was specifically chosen by Congress to eliminate the continuous churn and endless hamster wheel of remands that plagued the legacy system. However, even if the court were to consider the constructive possession arguments, the court should find that the documents identified by appellant are not constructively part of the evidentiary record here. Specifically, the court should find that while appellant's appeal was in the legacy system, the 2017 GOA report, the April 30, 2019 letter submitted by appellant's current counsel in another veteran's case, and the affidavit submitted by CCK in the Romero case were not constructively part of the evidentiary record. If we turn first to the 2017 GOA report, the court should find that this document is simply not relevant to the issues on appeal. The 2017 GOA report simply dealt with the cost effectiveness of VA mailing practices. It did not address the mailing of the May 2016 rating decision or the mailing of any particular document in the VA system. It simply deals with cost effectiveness. The court should also find that the document would not reasonably be expected to be part of appellant's claims file, as there are simply no connections between the 2017 GOA report and appellant's appeal in this case. If we turn to the April 30, 2019 letter submitted by appellant's current counsel and the two affidavits submitted by CCK and Romero, we would ask that the court find that these documents were not reasonably expected to be part of appellant's claims file. These documents were intended to be filed on behalf of a particular veteran. Reasonableness would dictate that these records should be in the claims files of that veteran and would not reasonably be expected to be part of the claims files of this veteran. Appellant's argument here would require that VA search through and dig through the claims files of various veterans, identify evidence that may be potentially relevant, take evidence from those files, and add them to the record on appeal. Such a requirement would violate the or eliminate the relevancy and reasonableness standard articulated by the Federal Circuit in Eusebio, and the court should find that these documents were not reasonably expected to be part of the claims files. But furthermore, we would note that there are potential privacy concerns here, where appellant's argument would ask that VA be required to take these evidence from another veteran's claims file, which might potentially reveal traumatic information or PII without the necessary consent as required under 38 U.S.C. Section 5701A.
Can you just clarify, right now you're talking about the Dehakis letter, and what affidavits are you talking about, the ones from Romero?
Yes, Your Honor. So in this case, appellant's counsel submitted three letters, one from April 30, 2019, which specifically identifies a veteran by name, another veteran by name. Then he also had two other letters from June 24, 2019. From briefing, appellant has also, or opposing counsel has also cited the two affidavits submitted by CCK in the Romero case, which I believe in the Romero case they were called the Chisholm affidavit and the
Robert
affidavit. I'm referring to these three documents, the April 30, 2019 letter and the two affidavits here. Both were specifically intended to be presented into a particular veteran's claims files, and we would ask that the court find it would be unreasonable to expect those documents to end up in a different veteran's claims file. If there are no other questions on this point, I'll move to the last point. Finally, the court should find that the two June 24, 2019 letters submitted by appellant's current counsel on December 5, 2019 are not part of the evidentiary record either under the constructive possession doctrine or under 3.156B. First, turning to constructive possession, the court should find that these two letters were not reasonably be expected to be part of appellant's claims files, as appellant as these two letters identify various veterans, but not the veteran at issue here. There are simply no connections between these two letters and appellant's case, such that they would be reasonably expected to be a part of appellant's appeal or appellant's claims file. We would distinguish this case from Eusebio, which dealt with the 2014 NAS update, where the Federal Circuit found that this update was constructively for the board or part of the record because there were strong connections between the update and the herbicide case that was on appeal there. Specifically, the Federal Circuit had noted that the updates were specifically identified by the Purple Book and directed VA adjudicators to use the update as part of adjudications. We would also emphasize that, as the Federal Circuit did in Eusebio, that the updates were specifically created by and ordered by Congress to be used by VA in adjudicating herbicide cases. There are simply not the type of connections here between these two letters.
Okay. I have to interrupt because I've been why are you using connections? I mean, that was part of what Eusebio was about, and they said reasonableness and relevancy were the criteria and specifically rejected this court's direct connection. So it's just, you know, could you, like, please choose another word?
Yes, Your Honor. When I say connections, it's simply the easiest way of demonstrating what the Federal Circuit had called how the Federal Circuit had found that these documents should be reasonably considered before part of the record. We recognize that there doesn't need to be a direct connection, but we would say that in order for a document to be reasonably considered part of the record, there should be some links, if you will, that would suggest a connect. There must be some links that would make it reasonable for the documents to appear in the record. Now, we acknowledge that these do not have to have direct connections, but we would say that there are not even the tangential links that would suggest that these two letters should be reasonably part of appellant's record. But furthermore, there are potential privacy concerns, which again, not connections, but would demonstrate that these documents would not reasonably be expected to be part of the record. We would note that here, presumably, these two June 24, 2019 letters were unredacted in their original form, and that including these two letters in appellant's claims file now would reveal PII without the necessary consent. Now, this, again, is simply to demonstrate that these two letters would not reasonably be expected to be part of appellant's claims files under the constructive possession doctrine.
Shouldn't the board make – I mean, that's a factual determination, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Shouldn't the board make that determination before we even touch it?
No, Your Honor. We would say here that first the court could find that these documents are beyond the realm of constructive possession, and therefore the board does not make any error in this case when it doesn't consider the issue of constructive possession. But we would again emphasize here that the reason why we're considering the issues of constructive possession and 3.156B is because appellant is attempting to have the evidence, which was submitted on December 5th, 2019, considered part of the evidentiary record. But AMA already has a ready-made remedy for this particular situation, and as recognized by the court in Aviles-Rivera, that remedy is for appellant to file a supplemental claim to have the evidence that was filed on December 5th, 2019 considered in the first instance. The last point I would like to make is that if the court were to find that none of the documents here, or specifically the two June 24, 2019 letters, were constructively part of the record in this case, then the court would need not reach the issue of whether or not 3.156B applies in this case at all. If there are no further questions, then I will simply conclude by questions?
No.
Okay. Then I'll simply conclude by asking the court should find that the board based its decision on the proper evidentiary record in this case, that the board properly found that the presumption of regularity as to the mailing of the May 2016 rating decision has not been rebutted in this case, and affirm the board's finding that the May 2018 NOD was not timely filed to appeal that rating decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yu. Mr. Dehakis.
Thank you, Your Honor. I've got a lot. Hopefully I'll get through all of it. I want to start by talking about the postmark rule. And again, if Congress was aware that the postmark rule equated receipt and filing, then there would be no reason to say receipt in the statute. And so clearly Congress, aware of the postmark rule, intended there to be a difference. And we believe that based on the Secretary's regulation, which requires the notice of disagreement to be filed with the board, receipt requires the board actually take possession, whether it's electronically or physical possession. And Judge Bartley, Chief Judge Bartley, pointed out that under the legacy process, the 90-day letter was understood to provide a definitive 90 days, particularly when the claimant sent in notice that they would be submitting evidence. And I don't have the case site to me, but there is case law. I'd be happy to get that for the court if they want it or if they require that. The supplemental claim is not a remedy until the board has considered the evidence actually before it. And in this case, determining what evidence was properly before the board is a necessary predicate before Mr. Davis can file a supplemental claim. We also have to consider the perspective of an unrepresented claimant. The Secretary argued that Mr. Davis was represented by experienced counsel, and he should have known all these things. But the fact is that we have to look at it from the perspective of an unrepresented claimant, where he receives a letter from the board that says we've received it. It's got a date on it. Somebody who's been in the process for some time, as Mr. Davis has from 2003 when he initially filed his claims, is used to seeing these kinds of letters and understands what they mean and would expect that those have the same kind of deadlines and meaning as they have always had. The Secretary also posited that if the court were to find in Mr. Davis's favor here that it could exclude evidence, but 7113, again, evidence – the record shall include what the agency received as well as evidence submitted by the appellant or with the notice of disagreement or submitted by the appellant within 90 days following receipt. So here again we have submitted, which is very similar and I would argue is the equivalent to filed and carries kind of a circular definition within Black's Law and Webster's. So the evidence being submitted is when it's actually handed over to or transmitted to, as opposed to when it was received. So that is not an issue if the court were to find in Mr. Davis's that his interpretation controls. And again, existing case law is no longer relevant because 7113 included this new term of receipt as opposed to filing. And the Secretary in his briefing and here today continues to use the word connection. And he also asserts that the evidence that's submitted for another veteran's claim can never be part of the record for Mr. Davis or any other veteran. But looking at Eusebio here on page 1320, requiring that the evidence bear a direct relationship or be specific to the veteran for constructive possession is without basis in relevant statute or regulation. This was emphatically discarded by the Federal Circuit. Evidence does not have to be submitted for this veteran. Other evidence, even for other veterans, can be constructively before the board. All that is required under Eusebio is that the VA have possession of it, that the VA know that it exists, and that it be relevant. And if it meets those three criteria, then it's reasonable that it would be part of the record for Mr. Davis. The privacy concerns, as we talked about in a reply brief, those are, I think, a red herring. Most of the, in almost every situation, I'm sure you could find one or two outliers. The relevant evidence or the relevant information from evidence in another veteran's folder, another veteran's record, will be limited to, like in this case, information about something that happened, whether it was an event in Vietnam, something that happened in Afghanistan, or that the VA can't seem to mail anything to the representatives of claimants. For nearly 5 years, there is overwhelming evidence, both in Romero, which we, again, argue is constructively before the board, and in this case, that the board and the regional office could not mail decisional documents and claims-related documents to representatives. It was an ongoing problem. Thankfully, it's been fixed today, or seems to have been fixed today. But at that time, it was a real thing, and that evidence needs to be considered by the board to properly consider Mr. Davis's appeal. one other point, the April 2019 letter in our reply brief, Mr. Davis withdrew that argument and does not now argue that it should be constructively before the board. So we're looking at three pieces of evidence, the 2017 GAO report, which is relevant because, again, it demonstrates that there was mailing irregularities, mailing problems in the VA globally. The Davis letters, which were submitted within a few days of the statement of the case, were constructively before the board, and we agree with the secretary that if you don't find that there's constructively before the board, then there's no reason to address the 3156B argument. And then the two affidavits in Romero, which were the board's decision in that case was issued a month or two before Mr. Davis's appeal, and so the VA had that evidence and is now aware of it, and it is relevant to his claim because, again, it demonstrates over 1,000 cases where the VA could not get evidence, decisional documents to the claimant's representatives. So in conclusion, we ask that this court find that the notice of disagreement was received by the board in September and that his evidence was timely filed, and if not, then the other evidence was, then that evidence was constructively before the board, and we ask for a remand so that the board can properly consider it.
Any questions? No. Okay, thank you, Mr. Dehakis. And the court would like to thank both parties for their arguments. The case is submitted for consideration, and we will come down and greet the parties.